Hey everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today as best we can make sense.
I'm Molly Wood. Thanks for joining us. I know it's a short week, but I really thought it was Thursday, so I'm somewhat disappointed inside my heart to announce that it's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, although I really like What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, the episode where you ask the questions and we get the answers.
Disappointed inside
my heart. I'm so sure.
All right.
Just positive.
Yeah, no, totally. The way this works, for those of you who are new, is you ask, we answer, with help from Marissa and Tony and Donna and everybody. Molly and I just get to, you know, sit in front of the microphones. And we start today with a question about a thing that I did not know existed until I had a sneak peek at the rundown for this podcast this afternoon. It's about a thing called Amazon Sidewalk. Here's what Martin in Indiana says. Amazon Sidewalk sounds an awful lot like Amazon turning into a bigger Big Brother. They already know what I'm talking about with other Echo devices. Now they want to know where my dog is. Make me smart. So, Molly Wood.
Man. Yeah. You know, I sort of cheerfully blew past this when it started to get all this attention this week. Amazon Sidewalk, but we can no longer, and nor should we. Amazon Sidewalk is a new service, they call it. And I use that term lightly. So the theory behind Amazon Sidewalk is that if you already have some kind of an Echo device, and that it includes a lot of its older devices that date back nearly 5 years, they're going to turn on this new functionality that will basically extend a low broadband Wi-Fi network farther, up to half a mile. And then devices that you own that live inside this Amazon universe, like the Ring or some little, you know, trackers, tile type trackers, other Amazon devices that are connected to the internet, can stay connected even if your internet goes out or you're not home. And the thing that everybody sort of flipped out about was, is Sidewalk going to share my internet connection with my neighbors? And kind of, yes. The theory is that if someone else has one of these same devices that is eligible and they are enrolled, that it'll create this kind of like neighborhood-wide mesh network, which will make the Internet of Things so awesome. And
Sorry.
Exactly. Like,
it was
there's
all
a
time. So awesome.
So awesome. Yeah. What's amazing is that there is a time when this would have been seen as potentially relatively non-invasive and sort of like techie cool. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, there will be this like neighborhood-wide mesh network. All these devices can be connected even if there's not local Wi-Fi. That'll be wonderful. Unfortunately, two things. One, it's Amazon. And this is just the function of the lack of benefit of the doubt that big tech companies have. The immediate question is, what are they going to do in terms of my privacy? Because they already collect so much information that this would then include lots of more granular location data. Somebody gave the example of like when you walk your dog, how far you walk your dog, you know, where you go when you walk your dog. And that then they would have the potential to combine that with all the other information that they have about you. The other thing that I really do find actually pretty astonishing is that Amazon is just going ahead and opting you into this by default.
That was the thing that freaked me out. I was like, what?
That is pretty bold. That is pretty bold because that means that everyone who has an Echo device going back up to 5 years, according to CNET, we're talking about potentially 100 million Alexa devices, each one of which now just became a little Trojan horse inside your home, opting you into this little mesh network without your explicit consent.
It's amazing. So look, let's do a little public service journalism here. Fire up your Alexa app on your phone, go to account settings, and then you'll see Amazon Sidewalk. You tap on that, and you're going to see that it is enabled by default. And if you want to disable this, just slide that little slider off to the left. That's all you got to do.
Yeah. You may, like me, need to update your app before you do this, just so you know. It's not in the, so hit update first and then go to this more thing, and then, settings. We'll have a link to this on the show page because I agree with you. That's a public service. Also, frankly, tells you how not at all. All of these companies are behaving in a way that tells me that Congress is not going to do anything about, right? Like, no. They aren't even a little bit worried.
Yeah.
About antitrust or regulation actually occurring. Because, like, to do that,
take your pick. Yeah.
In the environment that we are theoretically in with respect to backlash about big tech, just as either like willfully oblivious or says they know something we don't. It's that no one's getting in trouble.
Totally.
Ever.
Totally.
All right, moving on. Next question from Brian in Seattle about what once was our favorite topic.
The Ever Given. Well, is it still in cargo ship jail? What's going on? There's been very few updates. Very quiet. I'm concerned.
Oh, man.
Let me know. Keep me posted, please.
I have to tell you, even though it has disappeared from this podcast, it is still very active in the Slack channel that myself and the executive producer of Marketplace, one Nancy Fargali, exchange messages on probably a couple of three times a week. She's like, hey, Ever Given. It's still there. So
it's super big in Egypt.
It is still there. That's right. It's in a part of the Suez Canal called the Great Bitter Lake, which is kind of in the middle between the top and the bottom. Ship's crew is still on it, which is kind of wild. The Egyptian government has reduced its demand. It used to be $900 million. They now only want $550 million for damages and costs and lost time and all that jazz. Ever Given's owners have offered to pay $150 million. Egyptian authorities not taking the deal. Here's the thing, though. Egyptian, and I say this with all love in my heart for the Egyptian people, they are super, super stubborn. I don't know if you saw about a week or two ago, they finally let a guy who had been trapped on a different cargo ship all by himself for 4 years, they kind of finally let him go. So this crew of this ship could be in there for a little while. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
And also,
years and years and years.
You have to believe that the only reason they let that guy go is because then there were a bunch of stories about it as a result of this Ever Given thing. And someone might have started to be like, you know, I'm pretty sure that might be illegal imprisonment at some point. Also, I'm sorry. You do kind of have to pay something. Like, you screwed up the whole entire global supply chain.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yes, you are right, Brian. Even though we had let it leave our little hearts for just a second, it's still there. The Ever Given abides.
It abides. That's right. all right. Next question. Josh in Oregon. Here we go.
My 4-year-old daughter decided to get into my wallet and rip a $20 bill. So I brought it down to a local bank, whom I don't bank with, and asked them to exchange it for a new $20 bill. Can you explain to me how the bank gets refunded by the Treasury for losing that $20 bill?
Yes, we can.
They did replace it, it sounds like. Okay.
Yeah. I actually know the answer to this one without even peeking, because for some reason, when I was a kid, I went on this like destroyed currency kick. Anyway, so the deal is this. If more than half of the bill in question is extant, that is to say surviving, your bank will take it, they will trade it in, and they will get refunded by the Federal Reserve. But if less than 50% of the bill remains, or it's, well, less than 50%, and usually that's like it's been mutilated, burned, it's been buried in the backyard by some relative, and the ants have gotten it, whatever. Then it goes to the mutilated currency department, and you have to go straight to the Treasury Department, and they will have a look, see if they can reconstruct it and examine it, and maybe give you your money back. It's crazy. It's really cool. It's really cool. I love it. It's really cool.
So is this because I have several follow-up questions, but instead I'm going to go back to the beginning. Tell me more about your childhood destroyed currency kick.
I don't know. It was just the thing I went on.
God, you were always destined for this job, weren't you?
It was just random curiosity.
All roads led to Marketplace.
I don't know. But yes, and so it happens, like as Marissa says in the notes, it happens 22,000 times a year.
Wow.
Right? That people submit mutilated currency to the Treasury Department. I mean, think about it, right? Like grandpa who was going crazy in his old age buried $500 in the backyard, or somebody put it up in the attic and the moths got to it, right? I mean, it happens all the time. Yeah.
And you can't, and you have to guarantee it, sort of to get back to that question from Josh.
Right.
You have to replace it. Like you have to guarantee it, because if you didn't, it would say this currency note has no value Although weirdly, right. it also sort of says this piece of paper has no value.
But, well, let's not get into that, right? Because that's all different, whether it's a piece of paper. But yeah, provided you can submit 50% of the bill just to your local bank and you get the quick and easy refund or exchange, or if the examiners at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing look at it and say, yes, is it legit money, and we can verify that it was, in fact, once real currency, then they'll make good for you. Yeah. Yeah.
That is so fascinating.
Yeah. Huh.
I would have taped it back together, personally.
Learn something new every day.
All right, and then a quick bonus question, because one of us here is super obsessed with the new Ford Lightning pickup. Darby in California. Now I'm on a whole kick. I just today, BMW announced a bunch of new electric vehicles. They're going to do an i4 and an M50. Which
is that right?
Very exciting. All electric 2022. Okay. Darby in California, focus up, emailed us asking for an explainer on how electric vehicle incentives work, which is the thing where it's like, well, the Lightning's going to start at $40,000, but you get the $7,500 incentive, which it's a lot more complicated than that, sort of. But basically, because most electric cars are more expensive than gas internal combustion engines, and because there are reasonable government incentives around switching, i.e. climate change, there is the federal government offers incentives. The most generous is up to $7,500 for like some electric, some plug-in hybrid, and some hydrogen fuel cell cars, which only applies to new car sales, and you pay up front and then you get the credit later. And it's only up to the first 200,000 cars that the manufacturer builds. So there's an incentive to get there early as well. So they will not apply to like the Tesla at this point. Tesla just passed the incentive. They were kind of like people were trying to hustle to get them GM EVs too. And then there are also some state and local incentives. You can even get little kickbacks from your electric utility and that kind of thing.
And Biden wants to make it sort of expandable, right? Or expanded is the deal.
Yes. Yeah, actually, as part of the infrastructure package, I like how we talk about him like he's the king. Should that legislation pass, it would allow you to basically receive the credit when you buy the car, which would actually be fantastic, right? Boom, $7,500 off the car. And then there is a proposal to expand the number of cars sold before it would sunset. So you could sell 600,000 vehicles before the credit would sunset, and that would actually bring those GM. I think the Volt, I always mix them up, one of those. Like it was called the Bolt, now it's the Volt, or maybe vice versa. But either way, then they would qualify again. And there would also be an incentive on used EV purchases, which I think would really help because those, you know, Teslas are super expensive. For example, a lot of these cars are still relatively expensive other than the GM ones. And being able to buy them used with a credit would be a big incentive for a lot of people to switch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is that.
And that is the end, almost, of What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. A super quick thank you to those of you who helped us meet our fundraising goals after much haranguing by Ms. Wood and myself.
Yay!
It was because of y'all. Full stop.
We did it.
It was because of y'all. And thank you. Just thanks.
Yeah.
That's the whole deal.
We are, God, it is really amazing. It is direct validation of the kind that keeps our shop open. So thanks. We appreciate it. And now we'll stop bugging you for like at least
two months.
I don't want to promise
Stephanie
anything.
Patterson,
I have no idea.
Like makes us do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know.
Could just come at any time. All so right. Enjoy it.
we can though tell you that tomorrow will be fundraising free. Tomorrow will be a holiday shell of a Thursday. In the meanwhile, keep sending your questions, emails, voice memos, however you want to get them to us. Snail mail, who knows? Make me smart at marketplace.org. Just let us know what's on your minds, would you?
Oh my God, I want to see like a scan of a snail mail embedded in the dock.
I know, right?
One of these days, that'd be amazing.
That'd be pretty fun.
I guess you can't really email that. You could though. You could write it, take a picture, email it to us, do that. Anyway, Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and Make Me Smart explainers.
Marketplace heartthrob Drew Jostad was in charge today down in the studios. Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Donna Tam is the senior producer. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. We are going to get a camera on you, Drew. I promise.
It's going to happen. Fry. Yay.
Yeah. I was saying quiet. He was like not saying anything. She's like,
I ordered a little baby fridge. It's going to be here by Friday.
Oh, did you? Oh, that's such a good idea.
Yep. So that if I, by you. So if I need to switch midstream, I can. It only holds 6 cans. It's like totally teeny tiny, like basically a plug-in cooler. Perfect. So smart.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.